Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Vegan World. On this week's show, we have an absolute treat in store for you. I get the opportunity to speak to Steve Jenkins, who is one of the dads of the internet sensation that is Esther the Wonder Pig. Now, since I've been doing this podcast, I've always wanted to get Steve on the show, particularly so after having read his book in September of this year, Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time, which documents the story of how a little Esther, supposedly a micro pig, came into the lives of Steve Jenkins and Derek Walter. As it turned out, quite quickly, all was not as it seemed. So, without me giving the story away, I'll let Steve tell the story in his own inimitable way. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of Vegan World with Steve Jenkins, talking about none other than Esther the Wonder Pig.
I'm well, Neil. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you talk about Esther's online presence, and I think it's fair to say...
Of course. Well, it was an absolute whirlwind. There was no plan at all. We were literally just kind of sitting around one, I think it was a Friday night, if I remember correctly, and I just got a friend from school I hadn't been in touch with for years, but we're kind of connected on Facebook. You know, as many of us have acquaintances that on our friends list we don't really talk to. She was one of those who sent a message that said she had a mini pig and it wasn't working out in her family, and she knew I was an animal lover, and was I interested? And obviously that was enough to spark my interest, and I said, yes, I was, but let me get back to you. You know, I have to talk to Derek and do some research and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, that was fine for a couple hours, but she wrote back, somebody else is interested. I need to know right now, or I'm going to give it to this other girl. And, you know, sorry, that's the best I can do. She's got to find a home. So I panicked and said yes, and brought Esther home the very next day, prior to having time to do my research and or chat with Derek about it. So it all happened incredibly quickly. But she became no pun intended, a really big part of the family. I mean, she was hilarious, and she had so much personality, and you know, was became part of the pack of the dogs. We had two dogs at the time, Shelby and Reuben, and she became so close with them. And you know, Shelby and her would sleep together in a little dog bed all the time, and she made it really easy to fall in love with her. You know, and we fell in love with her very quickly. You know, it was a couple rocky weeks with Derek, you know, trying to get used to the idea. But by the time he got used to the idea and, you know, we found a vet, went and found the vet, that things kind of got interesting, you know, and we found out she wasn't necessarily the mini pig we thought, but we may had rescued and adopted a full size commercial pig, which turned out to be true. So that's really how it started. I mean, it was, you know, just to be 70-pound little mini, you know, pig that you see on all those adorable little memes on the internet. That's what I thought we were getting into. Yeah. And not even close.
One of the terms you used there, Steve, was that she became a big part of your life, almost literally as well as figuratively. How did you find and how did you manage accommodating her in the previous home that you talk about in the book? I mean, you must have made a hell of a lot of changes to accommodate her.
It did. I mean, the biggest change to the home was getting used to her intelligence, I think, is kind of what it came down to, because she was able to and had taught herself in no time at all how to open all the doors in our house. As soon as she could reach them with her snout, she would use her snout to push. We had like those lever style doorknobs, if you know what I mean. Yep. They weren't actual round ones you had to grab. She could just push them up with her snout and then push forward on the door, and that would open a door. So nothing was off limits. So you know where you can close the door, keep the dogs out of your office or out of your bedroom during the day or whatever. That wasn't an option with Esther. She also learned how to open all the cupboards. She would use the little ledge on the top of her snout to get in there to the cupboards and open all of our bottom cupboards, which is where, of course, I think us and most people store a lot of dry goods in the kitchen, you know? So it wasn't long before we had to rearrange our kitchen, and we were one of the few people that had our plates and cups in our lower cupboards because Esther didn't care about them and had to keep our food in the upper cupboards, you know? So it was funny though. She'd open the cupboards for a week or two after the change. And once she realized there was nothing there she wanted, she couldn't care less. You know, the only thing she wanted there was the food, and she had the ability to go and get it. Whereas, like I said, that sort of stuff we never had to think about with dogs or cats, you know, and her opening the cupboard started well before she was big enough to open the doors. You know, she was maybe a month and a half old before she started using her snout to open the cupboard and try to get food. You know, it was incredible. She just, at that time, we could use child locks. She still was within that size limit. You know, it didn't take long though before child lock was no match for her snout. So, you know, it was really interesting. It was, like I said, I've always had dogs. We had two in our family, but I'd always had dogs in my family, and so had Derek. And we had never dealt with anything even remotely similar, as far as the level of mischievousness and intelligence and, you know, almost plotting things. You know, one of the stories we used to tell all the time, and it's been a while, but she comes to this stealing food in the cupboards, and you know, we'd catch a door open in the cupboard and not think much of it. This is how we kind of figured out what was going on, right? Is we'd find a door open and think, oh, that's weird, you know, I must have forgot to close it, and then we'd go back, close the cupboard and not think anything of it, and you'd hear a little rustling and, you know, notice the door open again. And, you know, that's how we kind of figured out Esther was in there. But before long, she would open the cupboard and then come into the living room. You know, she started breaking it into steps because we kept her opening it, right? She'd break it into steps and she'd open the cupboard door and come into the living room and nothing going on. And a minute later, she'd go back and pull something out of the cupboard, but leave it on the floor and come back to make sure we hadn't noticed. And then go back the third time and actually run with it down the hallway, rather than try to do it all at once, you know. And again, it was a level of thought and processing, it seemed, in our minds that was just kind of hard to wrap our head around for an animal. It was mind-boggling, and that's really what kind of got us thinking about, you know, well, my God, she's, you know, the vet said she's a commercial pig and she's this smart, and, you know, that kind of is what snowballed the rest of the changes that kind of came with living with Esther. You know, I mean, we were not vegan when we met her, you know, but that was, yeah, didn't take long once we got to know her. And I might be throwing your questions off a little bit and going further ahead in the story,
that's okay.
But you know, it's all of that happened really fast. And it was just a matter of getting to know her, seeing that personality start to flourish. And, you know, I remember in those first couple of weeks when we first got her and we were seeing this sort of stuff already starting to happen, but we hadn't met the vet yet. And I had a friend come to me and say, oh, you know, Steve, you're never going to eat bacon again. And I said, oh, Jordan, don't be ridiculous. That's a different kind of pigs, you know, because remember, she was a mini pig in my mind at that point. And they're different, of course, than the kind of pig that I would eat, right? Why, how could anybody ever possibly eat a pet, right? Mm-hmm. So I even had that level of, you know, kind of a wall built up that Esther was a different kind of pig. I know we do that with dogs and cats, but I had done it with her and it was, oh, she's a different kind of pig, so it's fine. I can still eat bacon. You know, it's not the same thing, you know, ha ha ha. Little did I know. Right. But yeah, it was wild. It was unbelievable how I tried to justify it to myself those first little couple of weeks. And then, yeah, all of a sudden to find out she is, you know, what we eat for breakfast on a regular basis. You know, one of the things I mentioned in the book is a burger wasn't a burger if it didn't have bacon on it, in my mind. Mm-hmm. When Esther came into our life, you know, it was earth shattering to me that first kind of week after that vet's appointment was devastating, just devastating. It was awful. Mm-hmm. The guilt, I it's hard to explain the guilt, yeah. You know, I think probably was the biggest punch in the stomach is looking at her and that sense of guilt for the first little while. It was intense. It was really intense.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will probably identify with what you've said there, Steve. I mean, I know in my situation, many years ago, I've got two little kittens to look after and foster and provide a home for and care for them. And after a pretty short period of time, I began to really see no difference between looking after these two little souls and a chicken, a fish, a cat, or a pig, or a dog, or a horse, or whatever it happened to be, because they were all animals and they just all needed our love and our care and attention and looking after.
That's right.
Now, when you're referring to that in the book, Steve, I mean, there's a lot of funny pages in that book. I remember when I passed it to my other half to read. I could see her laughing from the other side of the pool, and I could see the shoulders beginning to shake at some of the stories that she was reading. And I was saying, I think I know where you are in the book right now. As well as some funny stories, or a lot of funny stories in it, you're very open and honest about in how the impact that it had between you and Derek. And you also refer to the punch in the stomach moment, as you refer to it as. But there's also the part of the book where you're cooking dinner one night, or Derek's cooking dinner one night, and everything changes. So talk to me about that experience and how much of an impact it had on you guys, and where it led you.
That was the light bulb sort of moment. It was either the day of or within a few days of that appointment. And one of our most, you know, favorite and common things for us to have for dinner was breakfast, right? Bacon mm-hmm. and eggs and toast. And you know, we're here in Canada, but square sausage is a big thing in my family. So we used to always have square sausage. And so Derek was cooking bacon. He had bacon on the stove. And we had the two dogs and Esther were sitting at his feet, you know, all of them waiting for their little snack to fall off. And I was sitting, we had kind of an open plan sort of house. And so I was sitting at the table in the dining room and I could see all of this happen and I could smell breakfast cooking. And Derek was looking down and looked back at me, as he said, and he's like, I can't eat this. And I said the same thing. I'm like, neither can I. And it was just as easy as that for us to be done with pork. Like it that in our mind, that was it. We're not going to eat any pork anymore. And that was all it was. You know, we even at that point had no intention of being vegan. You know, that wasn't the first thing that came to mind is we're going to shun all animal products. It was like, well, I can't possibly eat Esther, you know? So that was it. But what it also did is it made us want to know more about what that life would have been for her, you know? And I think that was the really important thing is not only did we decide, because it would have been easy to say, well, I'm never going to eat pork anymore and just kept those blinders on, you know, and continued with our beef and our eggs and everything else. But we wanted to know more about what her life would have been. And, you know, it's something I think the vast majority of people knowingly or unknowingly put a lot of effort into avoiding their entire lives. You know, we don't want to look at slaughterhouses. We don't want to look at those trucks when they go by on the highway. We don't want to know, you know, and it allows us to carry on doing. But like I said, she made us want to know what her life was about. And that was a Pandora's box. You know, the things that we saw and, you know, learned were, again, earth shattering. You know, it was just devastating. And the more we learned, the more we wanted to know. And that is what, you know, really got the ball rolling. You know, and it started again first with the pigs, and then we started to hear, well, look at all these health benefits and stuff that come along with these processed meats like bacon and that sort of stuff. So we started watching things. It wasn't full on into hardcore slaughterhouse documentaries and that sort of stuff. Like we were watching things like Forks Over Knives,
sure.
You know, stuff like that, the easier stuff to watch, What the Health, that sort of thing. And you know, that is kind of what started to really get things going for us. And well, maybe we should stop then with everything. Look how easy it is with the pork and the bacon, and we'll just stop buying meat. We'll finish the meat that's in our freezer. But we ended up not even finishing the meat in our freezer, and, you know, starting to give it away just because we didn't want it anymore. You know, so it started like that for us. It was a step process. Now, granted, it happened really quickly. You know, it was maybe, for me, it was about 6 months. Derek was faster. Dairy was a problem for me. I struggled stopping milk. Derek said he said it was funny. He said I was a real miserable person to be around for those first few weeks when I was giving up milk. He said it was like I was hormonal. And he said, you were just the grumpiest, angry. And, you know, I don't know whether it's true or not, but milk I struggled with. So, and for me, it was cereal. That's why. Cereal was one of my favorite things. You know, so I was so used to always having it, and it didn't taste the same when I tried different milks in my cereal, and it wasn't the same. And, you know, it took me a while to get over that. And, you know, some people think that it's just a light switch that all of a sudden that's it and it's over. And, you know, for some people it may be, for me, it wasn't, it was a process. And that's even with Esther right at my feet. That was one of the other things too. You know, I had all the motivation in the world because of her, and it still took me a bit of work to get there. you know, that it I was committed, but it took some time. And it's one thing that I feel since then, Esther, that all the stuff that has happened as far as the social media stuff, that's one of the things that I try really hard not to forget when we're talking to people and dealing with people. And when we get those messages saying, oh, well, I've given up pork and I'll never eat bacon again. And it's really easy to start hounding them and say, well, what about cows? What about chickens? What about this? And, you know, and that to me would have been really off-putting and was really off-putting. I think it's part of what all these misconceptions about veganism are kind of what I felt kept me away from it for a long time. And knowing all of a sudden Esther was having this little bit of influence online and, you know, knowing how I was before all of this had sort of happened, I was really, really careful to, you know, remember that. It took me time. I had Esther in my house and it still took me a little bit of time. So we try to really encourage people, you know, when we hear about these steps being taken, and it's because it's a real roller coaster.
You guys took the attitude to be really encouraging towards people rather than kind of dictating to people about what they should do and why. I mean, and in saying that, you don't shy away from the dark side of the meat industry, particularly with regards to the poor pigs that are caught up in it. In fact, you call it the dark side on your website. So you're quite open and honest and clear about that. You segue beautifully into my next question, Steve. It's almost as if we planned it that way. Now, you talk about Esther's online presence. And I think it's fair to say, domestically, with regards to some of the damage that Esther was accidentally causing around the house in the previous property, even though you'd adapted it to be as pig-friendly as it possibly could be, this was an opportunity to start some crowdfunding to fund the search for a new property, which would obviously be a lot bigger out of town and be more inclusive for a lot of other animals. Talk us through that process and how it worked. And I think if I remember correctly, there were some pretty stressful times in that.
Oh my God, that was, yeah, it's like I said, everything that happened from the day she arrived to, you know, even today, we kind of figure things out and take things as they come. None of it was planned, you know, from the beginning, and it, you know, we're getting a little better. We try to think we have a bit of a plan now. It's not quite as up in the air, but still, you never know how things are going to happen from day to day. And at that particular point in time, we had started a Facebook page with no intention of doing anything but showing friends and family what had been happening. It had been a heavy year and a bit for us, getting used to having Esther in the house. We lived in a place where we weren't supposed to have her. The bylaws, one of the things I would have found out had I taken the time to do some research, was we lived in a town where I'm not allowed to have her. And so all of a sudden this Facebook page, I mean, it went from 0 to 100,000 likes in less than 80 days. It went absolutely nuts. And like I said, it wasn't our plan. It just started to happen. And it happened because a girl I had gone to school with, I think one of the real kind of triggers that got her rolling was this girl I went to school with that I actually still was in contact a little bit. Her name was Karen. And she was involved with a group called Toronto Pig Save, and, you know, the save movement. Sure. And Karen was on my Facebook page. She saw the Esther post, shared it within her circle of friends within the animal rights movement, and it went from there. You know, that was kind of the first real kick it got. And it went nuts. And I think what happened is a lot of vegans and these animal rights activists were sharing it, but because of the nature of the content, it was getting picked up by a lot of non-vegans as well. Right? It wasn't the typical, you know, hard to look at animal rights activist content. So it just snowballed and it went nuts. So Derek and I knew we were going to have to move. We went to a lawyer really quickly just to see what was going on. And I think by the time she had 5,000 likes, so like it was within the first week that we panicked. And because we lived in a town of maybe 30,000 people. So to us, to think 5,000 or 10,000 people were following Esther, they might as well all have been neighbors. And it was horrifying. It was like everybody in town knew. News crews started to show up. It was awful. So we went to the lawyer and said, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Like, can they show up tomorrow and take her? That was my fear. And that somebody from the bylaw enforcement would show up in a white van and say, well, that's it. We're taking your pig. You know, she's going out to the country. And he said, no, 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 it can't happen. It would take, you know, 6 or 8 months or whatever it was before all the processes went through involving letters and courts and all that sort of stuff, right? So I knew we had some time, but either way, we knew we had to move. We either had to shut the page down and stop it, or we had to be prepared ourselves just to sell the house and move to the country and carry on. So that was kind of what we were going to do. But the page just kept on going, and it kept on getting bigger. And in that year that she wasn't on Facebook, when things, there was a rough patch for us. I mean, when we weren't sure whether we could keep her, and we were having lots of issues, and we had to look at what homing options we had for her. And we found farm sanctuaries. We'd never heard of them before that point, but we found out about farm sanctuaries at that point in time. But we also found out they were full. They were struggling for money. They were struggling for volunteers. Nobody had room. Nobody wanted Esther, you know, at that point, right? Nobody knew who she was. She was just a pig. You know, so nobody wanted her. Even if we did want to send her to a sanctuary, they wouldn't take her. And so we carried on anyway, but again, this fast forward to the Facebook page starting, we could move to the property on our own, or in the back of our minds, we had this, well, wait a minute, you know, farm sanctuaries are a thing. They're struggling, right? We know tons of animals need home. We know all this sort of stuff. Maybe we could start our own sanctuary. And so we went to the page and we said, guys, here's what's happening. We have to move because of where we live. We can just buy a bungalow, sell our house, buy a bungalow, do this, or we can start a sanctuary and, you know, rescue other animals, but we would need your help. And the support that they gave in that kind of initial ask was overwhelming and enough to give us the confidence to start looking. So again, at that point, we still didn't plan on, you know, needing whole crazy amounts of money. We just knew we would need some help. And we found this farm that would need about a $400,000, you know, campaign for us to be able to pull it off and to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we started this crowdfunding campaign, and that was the goal, $400,000 Canadian dollars. And we did it in less than 60 days. We actually went over by 40,000. Wow. So yeah. So we raised $440,000 in 2 months. And we're able to secure this deal on farm that we had found. And we put an offer in. We were in competition and put an offer in conditional for 60 days on us raising this money. And the owners, unbelievably so, accepted our offer, despite, I'm sure the other offer didn't have that condition, but I believe the other offer was developers. Wow. And they didn't want the property to be subdivided. So I think the story and what we were planning to do is what allowed us to secure that offer in those terms. And then, yeah, like you said, the campaign itself was up and down. I mean, it ended great, like I said, up over $40,000. But I mean, it started awesome and then it slowed right down in the middle. And we were like, oh my God, is it going to work? And it wasn't until like the last probably week, maybe, I don't remember the exact day that it went over, but it was maybe like about a week to go when it finally really picked up speed again and kicked up and went over. And then the last couple of days, it just kept going like crazy. I think people got excited once they saw that we were close and going to the goal. More people just started kicking in money again. And that big jump up and over that 400,000 happened in the last couple of days. Like it was really fast. Mm. So it was nuts. It was nuts. But until that point, we had an out. That was actually the scariest day because the offer was conditional upon us being able to satisfy this financing requirement. So once we had raised all that money, then to me, that was the most terrifying day because then we didn't have a choice, you know, then we had to do it. We told everybody we were going to do it. If we could raise this money, we raised the money. We had to do it. You know, who would we be then to change our mind or back out? And I mean, it was such a, I don't want to say a far-fetched thing, but it just seemed so crazy at the time that we're like, yeah, we're going to do it, but what are the chances, you know? And then all of a sudden it came together and we're like, holy, you know, holy shit. Like we're moving. Like, it was nuts. It was nuts. So, and that all happened, but like that was all done. I think it was within the first 6 months from this page starting out of, for no intentions, to becoming what it was, having 400,000 followers and raising all this money and that was in like a 5-6 month period. Like it was the most chaotic time in our life. It was absolutely nuts.
I remember reading that in the book and wondering, geez, where is this going to end for these guys? You know, it's quite a page turner, I have to say.
Well, seriously, and so are we, you know, and we're trying to figure out, again, like this Facebook page, like I keep coming back to that. Obviously, it's such an important part of what we do. But, you know, in the early stages, it was just, hey, here's Esther in the living room. Here's Esther in the kitchen. You know, like it had no direction and it had no voice and it had no anything. And that was fine. It was still growing like crazy. And then we're like, oh, look at all these vegans on the page. Well, let's start pushing some more vegan content. And this was another thing that kind of really helped us focus in on how we were going to present the page, by the way. I should maybe have clarified that because this was a big turning point for us. And I started to put up all this vegan content after the photo. You know, I'd post a picture, a photo, and then I'd alternate with some sort of vegan meme or something. You know, nothing graphic, but very overtly vegan. And all of a sudden, we'd get fights happening on our pages. So you'd get the non-vegan coming on the page saying, oh, you know, I'm falling in love with Esther. I don't think I can eat bacon. And then you'd get these vegan, you know, activists that were on the page saying, well, what about cows and what about chickens? And it started these confrontations in the comment feeds. And it felt like the people that were starting to kind of come around to the idea of not eating animals were retreating because they felt like they were being attacked, or they felt like this kind of funny space that was coming around with Esther and these funny photos, you know, wasn't what they thought it was. And we stopped with the vegan stuff and consciously decided, well, we're going to stick with this and give Esther her own voice, her own personal voice, and keep it funny and keep it light and try to do what happened to us, because we were seeing these messages of, oh my God, she's changing the way I look at pigs. We're like, well, they're telling us our own story and look what happened to us. And what happened to us happened because we fell in love with her. And that was it. That was the only influence, was falling in love with her, and our desire to know more is what changed the way that we looked at things. And so that's became our focus and what we were trying to replicate, and why the tone of Esther's page became and is what it is, was with that in mind, trying to focus it and get it figured out. And all of that was happening as well in these first few months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was nuts. And it took some time too, of course. I wasn't able to work as much. Derek wasn't working as much. So, I mean, it just consumed every moment of our day, you know, from the emails to the messages, to trying to do our normal work, to trying to manage the house and Esther and just live, you know. I mean, it just became I don't even know what the right word is to describe it. It was wild. It really was. And it was, you know, it was so overwhelming at times too, right? I mean, we just didn't know whether we were coming or going. And it was, you know, it got to the point in Georgetown, the old place we lived, where people were, you know, coming up to the fence, or you'd see somebody peeking over our backyard fence.
Really?
that knew where we lived, or would be knocking on the front door. Is this where Esther lives? And it became really invasive towards the end of our time in Georgetown. So yeah, it was pretty wild. And not that things have slowed down. I don't think it's really slowed down since then either, which is the craziest part. It's that we're kind of getting used to it. And granted, we're not moving anytime soon. That's for damn sure. But the pace of change and projects and things that are going on, and it just started this absolute total upheaval of our lives, you know, before Esther. I don't work in real estate anymore. Derek's not doing, he was a magician. He hasn't done a magic show in years. It changed every single aspect of our life.
I guess most people can only kind of begin to imagine the impact that must have had on you guys and how life-changing it was for you both. And in the book, you get that story and then a lot of other stories across really, really well.
One of the stories that I remember really clearly from reading the book, Steve, was the older couple.
Now, the lady was vegan. Her husband was not. But they were both aware of Esther's story, thanks to the lady.
And they were in the supermarket aisle one day, and the husband, as per usual, picked up his pieces of wrapped bacon and looked at them and put them back on the shelf. And the lady walking behind him didn't actually remark on it at the time until they walked out of the supermarket, and she happened to ask him why he did that. And he just replied with the one word, just because Esther. And I thought it was amazingly powerful. Really, really beautiful story.
It That story, anytime I have to tell it, makes me cry.
I'm glad I told it.
I'm glad you did it. It does, because, and that was early on. And that, like I said, the reason that's in the book is because that, to me, was a really clear demonstration of the power of just being funny and being kind and, you know, making people connect with her on a personal level, you know, because nobody said anything to that man, including his wife, you know, which is important. She didn't say anything to him until they got outside, you know, and that all happened because she was showing him pictures of Esther, you know, and rather than seeing bacon, you know, her name came to mind and her face came to mind. You know, she gave food a face and a name and a personality. And that's really hard to ignore. You know, once she's gotten into your head, it's really hard to see anything but that. And so that became our goal. And that, like I said, about how we kind of, you know, tailored the voice and the message and the way we present Esther's story, that message and that story was one of the key and most pivotal reasons why we do what we do the way that we do it. Because if you can get through to somebody, the way I kind of viewed it was this is an elderly gentleman that has lived literally for decades and decades a certain way. And in my opinion, owes nobody anything at that point in his life, you know, let alone that kind of a major lifestyle change. And so for me, if falling in love with a pig can have an impact on somebody like that and that kind of an impact, then, and also keeping in mind the impact she had on me and the type of person I was prior to her coming around, then in my mind, there's not anybody that we couldn't replicate that with given the opportunity. So that's become our focus and our goal. But yeah, that story broke my heart. It absolutely shattered me. Yeah. It was, it was pretty incredible.
Yes. I think you touch on a real key point there, Steve, for me, in this whole animal rights vegan movement. And that's that at the end of all of this, with the choices that we make, whether they're informed or not so informed, there's a victim at the end of all of this.
Yeah.
There's an animal who loses its life because you decide to pick up that packet of bacon or that piece of steak or whatever it happens to
be. Absolutely. Well, you know, Neil, I mean, it's one of those things, like if I thought that I could yell and scream and if I stood on a building, you know, for the rest of my life and screamed at everybody that the world would be vegan, I would do it tomorrow. It's that, you know, that was happening for a long time and that never worked for me. You know, that approach never worked to me and I needed a reason to want to look at those images. You know, I needed a reason to want to know what goes on those farms. And for me, it was her. You know, it was getting to know her. And you know, no amount of propaganda or yelling or belittling or shaming was going to get me to do what falling in love with her did. So you know, and there's a lot of people doing other things, you know, to spread the word of veganism. And to us anyway, it didn't seem like there was a lot of people that were taking that approach, the approach that we've taken, at that point. And again, we found ourselves in a really unique situation where we were able to present an animal like Esther in a very unlikely situation that made people stop and pay attention, you know, and see her in a position that elevates her from a farmed animal, you know, to a member of a family, you know, not much different than your dog or your cat or any other member of your family for that matter, you know, and it's really hard to replicate. You know, we found ourselves in a really unique situation and yeah, it's a powerful one. You know, it worked on us. It's worked on so many people. There's something about that smile and like I said, giving food a face and a personality, and you know, it's hard to ignore that kind of thing. It's easy to close your eyes when a truck drives by on the highway, but it's not so easy to get her face out of your head when you try to order a bacon sandwich.
Oh my
so
God, absolutely.
You know,
I know. It's a real bugbear of mine that when I see those trucks going up and down the motorways with those poor creatures, knowing where they're going, or even sometimes seeing them empty, you know what's happened. But anyway, I've got some questions for you about the main lady herself, Steve. So one of the books that you can buy online at the Esther store through you guys is the Esther Cookbook. What I want to know is, what are Esther's favorite meals? What's her go-to meal, and what can she not resist?
Esther loves pasta.
Really?
as far as actual meals, like when we're sitting for dinner, I mean, she gets pretty excited when we've got anything really going that we're going to share with her. It would be quicker for me to list what she doesn't like than it is for me to list what she does like. But one thing in particular, like the thing that she'll sit up while we're cooking, is pasta.
Right.
And I don't know what it is about it, but she just loves pasta. She'll sit up when you're boiling it, you know, and usually if she waits until she hears plates scrape in and she knows you're plating dinner, then she gets interested. But if you're cooking pasta, she'll sit up while it's boiling and wait, you know, to make sure that you know that she is expecting some. And, oh, it's hilarious. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm right with her on that. It's one of my favorite dishes, too.
I know. Yes, right. I know. It's funny. It's funny. And, I mean, we joke all the time, of course. Her love for baked goods is pretty fierce. You know, if you're baking something in the house, she's all up in the kitchen in a heartbeat. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the amount of cupcakes she eats does not match real life versus social media. You know, people would think that all she eats is cupcakes. She wishes, you know, again, she gets super excited about them. But they're just as if we would eat, you know, a treat few and far between. But my God, does she ever get excited about a cupcake? And you can tell just because the lip smacking that goes on for, you know, 20 or 30 seconds after, and their eyes are notably wider, and it's really funny, yeah, when you give them something that they're excited about. But this is the interesting thing. Any of the barn pigs are the same, you know? I mean, and they've all got things that they get super excited about. We've got one pig in particular, April, when we go for walks with Esther. Anytime Derek goes, and if it's an evening walk, well, he'll usually walk with a little glass of wine. Well, April will follow along the fence, waiting and honking for Derek to give her just a tiny little splash of his wine.
Are you serious?
And... oh, yeah, she loves it. She's the only pig that cares for it, but she will sit there, follow you along the fence. If he stops and looks at her with it, she'll open her mouth, just waiting for him to pour it in. It's hysterical. And she only gets, of course, a tiny little nick, but she is just so excited to get a little splash of wine. And it's amazing how varied their personalities are. That was the cool thing about moving to the farm was, you know, getting to meet all these animals that said we'd never even touched a pig before Esther came into our life. I mean, again, I didn't know any cows or I pet a goat at a petting zoo, I'm sure at some point in my life, but I'd never actually known any of these animals until they came to the farm. And yeah, the personalities are unbelievable.
I was laughing at myself when you were saying about the cupcakes there. It sounds like a couple of people I know at work and they're listening. You know who you are.
I know.
You should remain nameless. Maybe they won't. I'll see how they behave this way.
Hilarious.
One of the things you mentioned, Steve, was about Esther's size and with her being in the house.
Yep.
What did you do to manage any of that and as much as you could? I mean, what does Esther do for exercise, for example?
Yeah. Well, exactly. She loves to go for walks. So now it's weather dependent because she lives in the house. I think this is part of it anyway. She doesn't like to spend a lot of time outside in foul weather whatsoever. So once winter comes around, that's why she wears a coat and hat, is to try to keep her a little bit warmer. Yeah, and it's to try to motivate her. They're prone to frostbite, for one. So that's one of the reasons for her hat. And the other is because she's from a heated environment all the time. You know, when she goes outside, she feels it a lot more than the barn pigs who, you know, adjust and acclimatize to it as the seasons change, right? Esther doesn't go through that. She's like us. You know, if you step outside in a t-shirt in the winter, it's going to be very uncomfortable for you. So it's hard to motivate her to exercise in the winter. We try to keep her bundled up and take her for walks. She plays with a treat ball a lot. You know, those balls that the dogs would roll around. You can put Cheerios in is what we use for her. So that keeps her interested in things. We also feed her at the barn. So just for her to get her dinner, she has to get up and take a walk to the barn and eat, and then she comes back to the barn. So we do things like that. In the summer, it's different. It's harder to keep her home. they love exploring. So Esther will put on, you know, many kilometers a day in the summertime. They split their time between walking and exploring and rooting and napping. So it's, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Our evening walk, for example, is about a kilometer and a half, maybe 2 kilometers. But that's fairly typical in warmer months that we'll have dinner and then go for a walk. We'll do a lap at the perimeter of the farm. And she'll come back and lay down. So, but you know what? It's funny to put them in line with dogs. You know what I mean? Phil, yeah. our dog doesn't seem to care a whole hell of a lot. You know, he's just as excited to go for a run if there's 2 feet of snow on the ground as he is in the summer. You know, he's always excited to be outside and go and walkies. And, you know, pigs aren't. Pigs are a lot more thoughtful. Like, I swear she'll look and sit up and look out the window, you know, before she decides what time she's going to get her to bed or if she's going to go for a walk. You know, it depends on what it looks like outside. You know, on rainy days, it is not uncommon for Esther to stay in bed until close to lunchtime. Because she has no desire. And her desire for food, because she knows she's going to eat, I guess, right? She gets so used to eating whenever she wants. I mean, she doesn't have the food drive that some pigs will have where they are always, always, always starving. Esther's not like that. So, you know, if it's pouring rain outside, she'll hold it. She won't pee. You know, she'll wait until noon until it's an absolute emergency. And then she'll step outside, she'll pee, and she'll turn right around and come back inside and put herself in bed. So they're hilarious. They're more like people than they are dogs. 100%. It's hysterical to see how, you know, how thoughtful they are before they do or commit to doing anything. You know, you can't make Esther do anything she doesn't want to do. It's hilarious. You know, even right now, actually, as I talk to you, it's really cold outside. And she got up, she got out of her bed, she's come to the door. I've opened the door, but she's standing there looking outside and she won't go because it's cold. So I'll close the door in a sec and I'll have to give her a treat ball or occupy her with something like that. She wants to go out and go for a walk to the barn, but it's cold, so she won't go on the first attempt. I'll have to give her a treat ball or two, and then she'll get bored, and then she'll say, well, fine, I don't have a choice. I have to go to the barn. So it's hilarious.
Can't wait any longer.
You know? No, exactly. It's really funny. There is a whole different level of thoughtfulness in a pig than there is a dog. They're just brilliant animals. It's hard to explain, which is why we laugh at her constantly, because she is, it's like dealing with a 500 or 600 pound toddler, you know, just a funny pain in the ass toddler. That's what they are. It's hysterical. She's amazing.
Yeah. I look at the Facebook videos that you post most days and, I wonder what are those guys up to now, you know, what have they dressed her in this time?
Yeah.
It's a real treat, like, to watch.
She's a riot. And like I said, the personality is as big as she is. You know, it's mm-hmm. She doesn't mix her. I wish she could talk. I really do. You know, because you know exactly what they're thinking and what they want by their behavior and their vocalizations. And, you know, she will throw a tantrum in the kitchen if you are not fast enough getting her juice. And if you mix her juice and it's not strong enough, she'll flip the bowl over. It's not even that she won't drink it. It's like she has to flip it over to let you know she's offended that you presented juice that was not mixed properly. It's the funniest thing. She's absolutely hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. They're the most incredible creatures. It was such an eye-opening thing. I mean, obviously, as we've been discussing the whole time, but I just can't state enough how shocked I was at how misunderstood and misrepresented pigs are. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's probably one of the biggest kind of takeaways, this thought that they're stupid, messy, mean, good for nothing, you know, baby factory bacon makers. You know, it's unbelievable how wrong that is and how much is wild. They're just the great.
Steve is great. We could talk all day.
I'm a rambler, so don't joke. I could.
Believe me, that's absolutely not a problem.
We should discuss turkeys and Cornelius, because holy hell, let's talk about another eye-opening animal. My God.
Yeah,
the personalities
the videos,
in these birds just blow my mind. I had no idea. You know, we've been talking about Esther's personality, but I had no idea that a chicken or a turkey would be the same way. It's just incredible what you get to know when you actually look at animals and spend time with them and, you know, allow them to be themselves.
Yeah. They get an
probably most
to
importantly.
Yeah, exactly,
oh yeah.
Exactly that.
It really is. But sorry, I cut you off there. I
no,
apologize.
You're okay.
What were you going to say?
That's all right.
Can people come and visit Esther at the Happy Ever Esther Sanctuary?
Absolutely. What are they like? Yeah. We do tour days and work days. So as you can imagine, it takes a lot of work to run a sanctuary. And so we do a lot of volunteer days that will involve anything from gardening to cleaning a pasture of you know, the cow poops or goat poops or whatever. So a lot of volunteer work days, and tour days are exactly what they sound like, where it's just to come and walk around and be shown around the farm by a couple of tour guides. And Esther usually comes out on both days, but it's not a guarantee. So mm-hmm. you know, if she wants to come out, she'll come out. 99% of the time, it's like she knows that there's a crowd outside, and she'll wait till the afternoon and come out to see her people and parades up and down. It's really funny. And she almost always gets in her pool, sits in the pool, splashes around, and then walks around the fence again and comes inside. It's like she's got her own little routine. It's the funniest thing. But we don't guarantee it. The animals do what they want to do when they want to do it. And that happens from about May until October-ish. We also have a couple of special events that we do at the farm. So yeah, we are, but it's not open every day. There's a schedule that's posted on the Happily Ever Esther website. So people can keep an eye there. I think early in the new year, they post the schedule. It is worth noting, though, our schedule is up in the air for next year because of this swine flu thing. That's become a serious concern. And there is a chance that we will be suspending tours and work days just because of the risks that come with, especially here. We're very, very fortunate to have people travel and come to the sanctuary. But because of that, you know, the risks of bringing something onto the farm that shouldn't be here and getting our guys sick is something we're very, very cognizant of. So we're watching that closely. But of course, we'll keep people updated and we'll post updates on the website and on social media as soon as we know what's happening.
Fantastic. Well, Steve.
Sorry, that was a long answer for can people come visit?
No, people need to know.
See what I mean? Neil, I ramble.
Get online, have a look. That's the story, right?
Oh, Steve, man.
Thanks so much for sharing the story with us today. I loved every second of this. Thank you so much.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks a million.